Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan.
For those of you who care to join us, we will open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble, which states, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. And this evening, we are on step 12. Please welcome our speakers this evening. We've got Alfred and Ryan.
Welcome.
I'll let them introduce themselves once we get this rolling. And to begin, I'll read step 12 for us. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So, I will read the first paragraph, which is on page 89, and then these gentlemen will share for a few minutes on the reading. So, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. All right, gentlemen. Who would like to go first? What?
Oh. You go first.
All right. My name's Alfred. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Thank you, David, for asking me to be here tonight, and I'm really honored to share the podium with Ryan and Ryan. So, Ryan, and Alfred sounds like a law firm. So I'm here to talk about the 12th step, and one of the big things that the previous chapter leads up to is after step 11, it talks about, but without faith, without works is dead, there is action and more action. And so I don't get to stay in step 11 and make myself glow. I get to go get the biggest thing that I learned about step 11 was to get me fueled for the day and to get repaired at night. Because if I'm not fit spiritually, then I can't really be of use. I can show up and do things, but it may not be like effective, as some people talk about. And the 12 step right now, I'm sponsoring a couple of guys, but they're usually, my experience is I work with a lot of guys until we get to step 3, then we take the third step prayer, and then how's that inventory coming? And then it's like, they don't really, a lot of people stop there. I've lost guys at step 4 and step 9. And but like the reading talked about, you know, this will work when other activities fail. And I had a period of time, a couple times in sobriety, where 12-step work was pretty much, 12-step work and service work was the only thing that saved my bacon. Because I wasn't able to do much in the ways of my own recovery, but I could share my experience, strength, and hope with other people. And working with newcomers and working with, you know, sponsees and stuff, it's like the drink. I mean, it's like when I drank, the next day I would have to drink again to get the effect. It's like working with a newcomer, working with other alcoholics. I have to do this on a daily basis because I can't coast on yesterday's successes. I can't coast on what I do today because tomorrow I don't know what it's going to bring. And if I'm not in the right place to help people, and sometimes prayer was hard, but I could still, I remember there was a guy in Sarp. I used to come over here, and I met him at Downtown Young and Sober, and all he wanted was someone to talk to, and I was a complete mess. I was like, how can I be helpful to anyone? And he would call me, like, Wednesday night or Thursday night, and at first I was like, oh, I didn't want to answer my phone or anything, but I saw it was from the Sarp, and then he said, can you meet me after the meeting? Can you meet me at the meeting, and we can talk? And then so I went down there, and we talked, and I felt lifted up, you know. I felt a few degrees better than I did going into it, and the next day I had to do it again. And that's when I was blessed with two guys that kept going out and drinking, but they still wanted to meet and go through the steps. And the one other thing, to have a host of friends is an experience you must not miss. When I got here, my drinking had, I had just became a total isolator. I grew up in isolating because making friends was really difficult. My dad was in the Air Force, and we'd move a lot. And you make good friends, and you get uprooted, and then you got to start all over again. And when I got here, I had a few friends from high school that I'm still friends with today, but they didn't really drink. And when I lived in Missouri, I found some friends, like-minded friends, that drank like, they drank, but only one of them drank like I did. And I remember one time, I wanted to drink really bad, and there was an ice storm that hit when I was living in Missouri. And this one guy was hanging out at the house. I think we had a party the night before, and I just really wanted to drink by myself. And this ice storm came through, or was coming through, and I was like, I wasn't mindful of his welfare. I said, you need to go. Because I was just, I don't know if any of you can relate, but I just got so antsy. I just couldn't wait to be by myself and drink. It's like, God, I'm with the ring. It's like, I want my precious. And that was the precious alcohol. And I couldn't figure out how to stop that. And so I got here, I had hardly any friends. I was living a depressing, isolated life, watching movies, getting hammered. I remember one night, I must have been feeling really bad because I got hammered in my parents' garage watching Schindler's List. That was horrible. I don't know what possessed me to do that, but that's where my mind would go. Just like, how can I get really depressed or listen to depressing music and get out the high school yearbook and be like, oh, you know, why didn't I ask her out? But that's the type of regret I lived in, and the only thing that dulled it was alcohol, and I couldn't stop drinking. And now I have a host of friends, and it's amazing. It just happens. I just show up, take action in these steps, get a sponsor, get a home group, and then get involved. And then the friendships just happen. I mean, I think because I can actually see outside of myself sometimes, but it's really to go from the isolated, shy guy who couldn't talk to a guy who it doesn't really bother me that much anymore. I still get nervous, but it's the miracle of the program and the actions I took, and the God of my understanding that I found through the steps, and like finding fellow comrades. Because my first AA meeting, I went to the people there. Basically, the closest thing to being 12-step, basically, was the coffee maker and this one lady who showed up early, and they just shared how they thought, felt, drank, and acted for a half hour before the meeting started. And that was the first time I could relate how I drank with other people, because they were me. It's like I can help other people because I have alcoholism, and I have that common bond with y'all, and we can talk to each other, and we go, man, I get that, and like we can laugh about crazy things. But it's just wonderful to be here tonight with friends. So, and I'm really glad to be on the stage with my friend Ryan. Thank you.
Thanks, Alfred. Hey, y'all. I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I'm really grateful to be here, too. I've known Alfred for the past year or so, and he's been a really key person in my recovery, and it is an honor to be here with y'all tonight. You know, I would have expected to be doing something like this. Still a little nervous, but my sponsor a couple days ago, he was supposed to come, and he ended up not being able to come, so he's like, you're going. I was like, all right. He's like, you can do it. So a little bit about myself. I grew up in Williamsburg, Virginia. First drink was when I was like 15 years old, and the first time I ever drank was with my buddies, and we just started chugging vodka, and there wasn't anything social about it. We wanted to feel the effects. I wanted to change the way I felt, and it worked, and that was the beginning. And my alcoholism quickly advanced to drinking, not just weekends, but during the week in high school, throwing up on the way to school, doing other things. 'Cause once I figured out that something changed the way I felt, I was like, this is it, you know? I've lost relationships, I've lost all kinds of stuff, but really I never really started anything because of my alcoholism. It prevented me from growing up. It prevented me from I don't know, now that I've got 14 months sober. My sobriety date's September 2nd, 2014. And so I was like, asking him, I was like, you think I'm ready for this? He's like, yeah, sure, you can do it. So I guess step 12, when I first started AA, you know, I saw step 12 up on the board, and I thought, you know, I want to do that. You know, part of me wanted to be able to help someone else, because I know or knew how it felt to be an alcoholic. And so it appealed to me, you know, getting to step 12. And I wanted to do step 12 when I was on step 1, you know. But they say, you know, you got to do them in order. And it's step 12. So I don't know what it is, but I feel like this is the meat of the program, and what it's kind of all about. It says we have to have a spiritual awakening, or as a result of the steps, we had a spiritual awakening. It says we might. It doesn't say we might have a spiritual awakening. It says having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So it's kind of promising something right there. I got my first sponsee when I was 10 months sober. I've gotten through the rest of the steps, and I like I said, I couldn't really wait to do it. And this guy Jim came in, and he wouldn't mind if I said his name, but he I don't know. It's been really good. I don't know. I feel like he came. God definitely put him in my life because I was kind of at a place where I'd done the other parts of the steps, and I was kind of wondering, you know, things might have felt a little stale. You know, I live in Gloucester. Things aren't like necessarily super exciting all the time. And I was like, okay, well, this guy comes into my life, and we started talking about sponsorship, and it just all started off there. And I like this part here. It says, you can help when no one else can. And I can really relate to that because when I went to treatment in 2011, I knew I had a problem. I didn't want to totally admit it, or I didn't know how to ask for help. And I knew that if I talked to anybody about it, they weren't going to understand because they hadn't been there. So when I found out that a lot of the therapists and a lot of the people working at the treatment center were actually in recovery themselves, that's when I was like, okay, well, maybe I can open up to these people because they have been there. And that's when I realized early on that we can help because we've been there, and not everyone necessarily has done or seen or lived like, you know, the things we have, and so we can relate. And a lot of people, you know, God bless them, they help a lot, but I feel like when I was in that treatment center, you had to have been there to really understand me. So helping someone that I know has been in the same place as me, it really fulfills me a lot, and it's taken my recovery to a new level. I'll pass.
All right, thank you. And we're going to continue on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Alfred?
Alfred, alcoholic.
No.
Hi, Alfred.
I remember my first 12-step call was to a hospital to a guy who didn't want it. A guy called me. I was like new. I was about, I don't know, maybe 9 months or a year. And he said, do you want to go to the 12-step call to the hospital? And I said, sure. And I got really nervous and I didn't know what to expect. And so we got in the car. We went there. And he was in the hospital bed. His family called Alcoholics Anonymous to talk to him. And we brought some literature, and he just really wasn't interested in what we had. So that was, he wasn't ready. I don't ever know what happened to him, but we left him some literature, we left him a meeting list, and we talked a little bit about ourselves. And as I've met people now, lots of times I share my story from the podium, and people will, you know, talk to me after and they relate. And then when I hear other people talk, that's how I figured we were a match, you know. It's like, because you're like, my first sponsor, I asked how to get a sponsor after I was 2 months sober, and I was going to meetings a lot, but I wasn't doing anything with the steps, and I started to get, you know, to quote the book, irritable, restless, and discontented, and I asked an old timer in a meeting, you know, I was sharing that I was feeling that way, and she was like, well, do you read your big book? No. Do you have a sponsor? No. And she was like, well, there's your problem. And I was like, I got a little frustrated, but I learned enough humility to go, well, how do I get a sponsor? And she said, ask that. And then this other guy in the meeting said, ask that man over there. So instead of asking that man over there, I looked at someone else. It was jacked up. The guy I was working with was telling me all about his problems, and I was like, isn't it supposed to be the other way around? It's like, I'm trying to get well here. You're supposed to sponsor me. So that lasted 10 days, and I had to do my first adult thing and go, this isn't working out. I'm going to go work with a guy who was suggested. So then he was the one who took me through the steps the first time. And it was a mix of a whole bunch of different things, meetings, the 12 and 12, the big book. But all the stuff that we did there was what I needed at the time. Because I was able to get over a few things. I'm finding myself in the 12 and 12 and the guy full of faith reading of alcoholism, and then getting into the big book. And then I couldn't follow instructions very well either, because he's like, read 60 to 63. So, oh, I know. This is a test. I need to overachieve. So I read into the fourth step and go, that's asking me to do what? And he was like, what did I tell you to do? 60 to 63, don't read ahead. He used to tell me, don't think, it weakens the team. So he would bring that one out every now and again. So, but yeah, that's now I've been sponsored by a few gentlemen now. And what they do is what I do. We carry them through the book. We get together and meet and we read and we do what it says. And one time I had a bunch of guys I was sponsoring, so we had a group of us get together, and that worked out pretty good. I mean, it wasn't as like intimate as like, you know, one-on-one carrying the work, but it was like a group. And then once we got to step three and step four, it's like people just disappear. And I would just encourage people who are about to do that, you know, stick around. It's not that bad, even though it feels like the worst thing possible. And I was thankful for people to, you know, I had one guy I was sponsoring, and I was trying to control people. Like, one time a newcomer would come in, I'd be like, you got a book? You got a sponsor? You got a home group? You got this? You got to call me? You got to do this? And my sponsor at the time was like, you're scaring them away. Because I was just trying to make sure that they got everything, you know, right now. It's their first meeting, and they're like clueless. Because I was clueless my first meeting. They asked me if I was there to see Bill W., and I said, I'm in the wrong place. And they said, are you here for the AA meeting? I said, yes. And but this one guy I was sponsoring, he just flat out told me, he came up to me and says, I'm not through yet, I'm going to keep on drinking. I didn't know what to say, because a few guys I was working with were like just coming up with excuses and excuse, well, this and that, I think. But he just floored me. I think I smiled too. I was like, that was the most honest alcoholic I think I've met so far. And he just said, yeah, we're not done. And I said, well, you know where we are, and if you ever need to talk, talk. But one thing I'll share, and then I'll hand it back to Ryan. As a sponsor, we get the blessing to help people get free. And I saw a guy who I was working with, and I don't know if he was an alcoholic. I just think he needed to talk about something that bothered him a lot, that he would drink over. And one time we went to lunch, and he just in the parking lot told me what it was. And then he's free now. I don't know. It's just, I don't know who I'm going to help or how I'm going to help. But I do know I have two ears and I listen a lot. And my mom and I have been blessed with this gift of people just randomly coming up and talking to us. But it's very helpful in this program, because like sometimes I need to listen to what you're going through, and then I can share experience and help you. And the guys I work with help me a lot too, because a lot of times I could be in a bad place, and they'll call me at the right time. Am I bothering you? No. I might look at the phone and say, oh my God, it's so-and-so again. I did that a lot. But I will pass it back over to Ryan.
Thanks. He reminded me of a story. I'm Ryan, I'm alcoholic. He reminded me of my first sponsor. I've had two. When I got to treatment, you know, they handed me a paper and they're like, you got to get a sponsor. And I was like, All right, I knew that I didn't have any more answers, so I didn't even know what a sponsor was. So I got the paper and I called the numbers, and I got first guy didn't answer, second guy didn't answer, and the third guy had this crazy name. He was 100% Korean, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to ask this guy. And he answered the phone, and he goes, oh, okay. It's like he knew I was going to call. And he's like, read the doctor's opinion and call me back. I was like, okay. So I hung up, you know, I went back sometime later and read the doctor's opinion. And he's like, tell me 5 things you've learned from it, too. So I'm sitting there trying to find exactly what he's talking about, because I knew there's 5 things in there he wanted to hear. So I'm trying to find the 5 things, you know, in this part. And I write them all down. I write it down, and I called him back. He's like, he's like, okay, so what'd you learn? You know, I read 1, 2, 3. He goes, okay, great. Read the doctor's opinion and call me back. And so I was like, what? Doesn't make any sense. But I knew, you know, there was probably something to it. And I heard that, you know, the sponsor, could, like, my first impression was a sponsor is going to be the guy. It's like telling you what to do and do this and do that. But, you know, that's not really how I respond to people. If someone's, like, telling at me or trying to, like, point their finger, you know, I never, ever responded to authority well. Or if you wanted to tell me something to do, you know, I'm going to do the opposite just to piss you off, and because, you know, I know everything, and I got it. So I don't know, this paragraph here kind of speaks to me, I try to talk to, you know, all of my fellow friends and alcoholics the way that I would want to be talked to, you know. It's hard, you know, my ego wants to point and command, and I do it sometimes, but I quickly have to realize that, or have it pointed out to me that, you know, it's not my job to direct, you know, that's a higher power's job. My job is to, you know, lay out the spiritual tools, but in the beginning, you know, when someone's new, my job, I think, is just to be compassionate and just to be a friend, because that's what I wanted or needed, you know. Steps, doctor's opinion, like, what the hell is that? You know, I'm just trying, like, detoxing, and I just need a friend, you know. My mind was so cloudy, you know, I didn't really, nothing much would have stuck anyway. So, like, when someone's really new, you know, my motto is just to be a friend at first, and to kind of be supportive. As for, like, I'll use me and Jim, for example, for the first month, we just became friends. And we did tell, I told him stories about my escapades, you know, so he could relate. I needed to know that I was talking to someone who had been there and done that. So I had to make it clear, or I tried to make it clear that I had done, you know, I just told him about the life I'd lived, and just tried to be an example of what the program is doing instead of trying to tell him, you know. Let's see. But yeah, I mean, we laughed. We started laughing together, and we have become friends. It's more than just a thing, but he's involved now, and we all are like a fellowship of brothers. And back to what we were talking about before, the fellowship, it strengthens, and I don't know. I feel like I'm going to ramble if I keep going on fast.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. All right, continuing on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop, showing the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this if we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book, unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Yeah. Most of the time now, it's like by the time we're at this point, we're usually working out of the book. And but there's some guys who I've been reading with. We're not supposed to judge, but I don't think they're alcoholics. But I let them come to that conclusion. And they may be in their own mind. I mean, some guys who just, I was working with, they drank like 6 beers a night, and I was like, I don't relate to that, because I would really hammer it and get really loaded really fast. And but I would still, until they figured it out, I'm not gonna, you're an alcoholic, we're gonna go through it. And when those things happen, it works out however it's supposed to. Lots of times, if they're not really alcoholic or they have other issues, they just kind of disappear. But I still meet with them and I still treat them. And I don't treat them like a doctor, but I still will work with them and listen to them. And like some guys, I don't know, I think they were beyond whatever help I could provide, because they were, would really get hung up on the religious items and, you know, the principles in other books, vice the principles we're doing here, and that's a really struggle. And one of the hardest things I had to do is, like, I say I'm not going to talk about that, because I'm talking about what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And like, lots of times they're way smarter than me on the religious issue. So I try to keep it focused on drinking, and we're recovering from alcoholism. And the guy who was sponsoring me, he said, you know, as I was asking about religion, he says, religion should enhance your program but not supplement it. And that was really, it made sense, because some guys, they get really active in the church and they're fine. Some people, they get untreated alcoholism, and they think, like I was talking the other day, it's like I never addressed the issue. Like when I was drinking, it must have been the fast food I was eating, because I traveled a lot. That's why I'm on stomach medication. It wasn't drinking liquor, doing shots right after work and drinking on an empty stomach until midnight, and then ordering food and eating, you know, it's just a vicious cycle. And and like lots of times, I don't think I was ready. When I was quitting before, I couldn't stop on my own, and I couldn't stay stopped. And we were talking earlier in the parking lot, you know, once I stop drinking, that's when I find out why I drank, and deal with the stuff I don't want to deal with. And like, the cool thing about a sponsor that I've had is that they are a closed-mouth, trusted friend I can talk to about anything. But it's like Ryan was saying, I got to build that relationship at first, because I'm not going to go vomit all my problems on somebody. And I did vomit a lot when I drank, but I try not to do that and vomit in the mouth now. Let's get off the vomit topic. But you're just trying to be there and be open and offer a helping hand and just listen. And then when they're ready to work the steps, it's just like, you know, okay, this is what I did to get sober, and if you're willing to do these things, we can walk together shoulder to shoulder and see what happens.
Thanks. I just wanted to throw it out there real quick. As from my understanding, the 12 step isn't just sponsorship, you know. There's many ways to do 12 step work. One of those is just simply sharing at a meeting, or going to pick someone up, taking them to one of their first meetings. You know, that stuff's important. I was trying to figure out what I was going to say. But tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. After me and Jim started becoming friends, and you could tell he was kind of getting interested in what this thing was all about, we started getting in the book, and when I was going through the book, you know, I don't know if it's helping him more or if it's helping me more, because I'm seeing stuff all over again, you know, in a different perspective. And I need to be reminded of all this stuff too, you know, especially, you know, step one. But I guess if I'm trying to convey a point to somebody, I always, you know, I was taught to use I statements and tell them how you experienced it and what you've done to stay sober, and they can take that or they can leave that. Alfred, I think, said something. It's like, we are the pizza delivery guys, and we have this hot, fresh, ready, delicious pizza to deliver to somebody, and it's up to them whether they want to take it and eat it. You know, they can do whatever they want with that pizza. They can put it next to the door and leave it there. They could put it on the kitchen counter and think about eating it. And some people might just eat it right there. But that's, you know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. Like I said before, talking at someone never worked for me. If I saw something attractive that I liked, it was because I saw it as an example that, or someone shared it as their experience, or, you know, using I statements. And I said, well, if they can do that, then I can do that too. And maybe I'll try that, you know. But another thing when I first thought about, you know, trying to do 12-step stuff, some people would kind of intimidate me, and maybe it was like their demeanor or their just the way they looked, or I don't know, but that was me being judgmental and fearful. And I had to learn that, you know, people are sick just like I am, and I don't know how to explain it, but from reading the book, the more desperate someone is, the better, because they might be more willing to eat the pizza. And I don't know, it's not up to me to decide who I am supposed to go help. You know, that's my higher power's job. He brings these people to me. It doesn't matter what they look like, what they smell like, or what I think. It doesn't matter what I think. You know, it's up to me to be there and have the hand of AA to always be there, and that's my responsibility. So I pass.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. All right, continuing on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of mind and body which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to them about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of an alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If a man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your convictions are.
Yeah, that's one of the big things I try to stress, because when I got here, I'd already tried to get sober just through church. I remember trying to do things in church to feel better, like teach Sunday school. And I did that up for one Sunday, and it didn't work out too well. And my religious connections, I believe, kept me enough spiritually afloat to where when I stopped going altogether, I mean, I spiraled into alcoholism real crazy without any kind of spiritual foothold. And I'm talking to people, as I don't want to arouse anything because that's a very touchy subject. And if someone came to me and said, well, you got to believe this way and go to this church to get sober, I'd be like, I already tried that. But nobody did that. They just talked about them and their conceptions. And that's what I try to do, is, you know, talk about my experience, like Ryan was talking about, keeping it focused on me, because every time somebody would talk about my drinking, you know, the pricks would come out. And what are those things on a porcupine?
Spines.
Quills. Yes. That's when I drank too much. So I talk about myself, and that's what people did to me. They talked about themselves and their drinking, because one of the biggest turnoffs to me is like, you need to do this. So I don't need to do nothing. And I just have this, even at work, when somebody asks me to help out with something, my first thought is, it's negative. They're like, I don't want to do that. But then it's like, I catch myself and go, how can I be helpful? And what else was in there? There's something. I think I'm going to be quiet now.
It's getting harder. Okay. So I'm looking at this, and I'm so explained. It says, explain to him that he doesn't have to believe in something that, I guess, talking about like step two kind of stuff. He doesn't have to believe in what everyone else believes, just as long as we believe in something greater than ourselves. At first, my higher power, you know, I looked at the sun, and I knew the sun was bigger than me, and it made all this life on the earth kind of feeds off of it. And I used the meetings as my higher power. That was just something basic that I could start with. And just move from there, because they said you gotta, if you know, basically believe in something or just go on being miserable. So when I talk to somebody, and you can pretty quickly determine whether they believe in something or not. If they don't, that's okay. But if, you know, I guess, It's, I don't know. It's, this is a hard one. As long as I'm just, I just want to help somebody to believe in something. It doesn't matter what it is. They can believe, they can do the doorknob, higher power. It, that's fine. It doesn't matter to me because I don't know. I've never been atheist or agnostic. I have been agnostic. I was an agnostic. I knew there's something existed. I didn't know what. But in church, I went to church as a kid, but it never really stuck with me. I used to get drunk and high before church. But what I guess I'm trying to get at is just helping somebody to believe in something. It doesn't matter what. You know, my ego might want to think that they should believe in a certain thing, or they might, my ego might think it's weird if they don't believe in something that I think is right or whatever. But really, it's up to them to decide what works for them. As long as it's something, then there's some sort of progress. No one forced me to believe in something that they believed in. I was allowed to come up with my own kind of conception. When dealing with such a person, you better use every. It's better to use everyday language than to describe spiritual principles. I like this part because I'm not a priest or some sort of spiritual guru. I talk the way like I would every day, you know. And when people kind of do the these and the thous, for me, I just kind of get lost in all that stuff. And talking like you would every day, as you would a friend, I guess I can communicate better. I don't want to preach from a hilltop or try to tell someone what to do. Don't raise such issues about a higher power, no matter what your own convictions are. Like I was saying earlier, it doesn't matter what I believe in and what they believe in. As long as they believe in something, then that's progress, you know. And I'll go with it too, sure. And that's, you know, I'll go with it and encourage that. That's fine. But I know that having a higher power is important, and it's very important. And I don't want to be the reason someone bucks the idea or decides they don't want this thing because I'm trying to preach from a hilltop or put my views on someone else, because I never liked when people did that to me. But yeah, I think I'm good.
All right, thank you. We are going to jump over to page 94. It says, outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It's important for you to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you've disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions.
Amen. I just try to talk to people, and like when I've tried to be directive, I can only share how I got sober. I don't really know what you need to do, but I know what I needed to do. I know what I went through and what worked and what didn't work. And I don't really, hey, you know, when someone asks me to sponsor them, I go, why don't we meet for coffee and talk for a little while? And I used to say yes right off the bat, and then it's like, I don't even know the person. They might not even be an alcoholic. They might have other problems. I just don't know. But I always say, well, let's meet and talk, and then we'll talk and get to know each other, and then I'll share about my drinking, and hopefully they'll share about theirs, and I explain, this is what I do, and this is how I know to go through the program. And if they're interested in doing it, fine. If they're not, then I don't try to close any doors, but I say, this is what I'm willing to do, this is what I'm not willing to do. I try to be open-minded and work with people, because some people may have different needs. But I try to just be there and be open and be available. That's the most important things I can do, because I can't afford... I mean, I didn't like being... I hated organized games in elementary school and high school, because I'd always be like one of the last ones picked. And I don't want anyone to feel like they're one of the last ones picked. I mean, if someone needs help and they come up and talk to you, it's one of the best things to do is just be attentive and exchange phone numbers. Because I try to get other people's phone numbers now to call them, because that first phone call is really difficult. I mean, after my first meeting, I made my first phone call, and I dumped out all my beer and liquor, made the call, and the guy shared with me to read the doctor's opinion, and there's a solution. So now I get other people's numbers, like, hey, we met at the meeting, and when I remember, but hey, how you doing? Because I might not see these people again, and maybe that one time, and then I'll be quiet, one guy, I just randomly thought of him, and then I gave him a call. I only got his voicemail, but it was months later. He says, you know, thank you for calling me that night. I didn't call you back, but just to know someone was thinking about me put me in a better place. So yeah, and like Ryan alluded to, it's about carrying the message, and it's also carrying the what we do in AA to the outside world, and practice these principles in all our affairs. So thank you.
Thanks, Alfred. Something that was going through my mind, I forgot, I go to a meeting in Williamsburg about once a week, and it's a rehab meeting, and they're always looking, you know, they're for temporary sponsors, and I have a bunch of people, you know, almost every time every other time, somebody will say, will you be my temporary sponsor, and I'll always say yes, and then I give them my phone number, but only like 10% of those people actually call me back. Yeah, but the people that call me multiple times, it gets whatever. But so like I'll be like living my day, you know, all up in my own brain, thinking about myself and all the crap I got to do, and then all of a sudden one of these guys will like randomly call me, like this random phone number will show up. And it's one of these guys, you know, that I gave my phone number to, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm just like, I'm not thinking about myself anymore. And it's cool how that happens, you know, and we'll just start talking. We'll just start talking about whatever. Either they'll have a question or they just want to talk, or they're in the treatment center still. But sometimes that totally saves my day, because like I don't know about you guys, I get insanely wrapped up in my own self, in my own thoughts, what I gotta do and what I gotta make and what I got going on, you know, and it hurts. It starts to get painful because my brain just obsessively thinks about crap. It's not even about alcohol anymore. It's and drugs. It's about life stuff. And when one of these people calls me, it's like relief, you know. And I don't even realize it at the time. I don't realize it until it's all over. But all of a sudden, I'm not really thinking about myself anymore. I might not even realize it the rest of that day. But looking back, I realize that I get an opportunity. It's a blessing to be able to get out of myself at that moment. It's a simple phone call. Sometimes I don't call my sponsor as much as I really should, you know. But on the other end, somebody calls me, it does the same kind of good. And I don't know if they're helping me more than I'm, or if they're helping me more than I'm helping them. I don't know, but it definitely helps me, and it's kept me sober up until today. So, yeah, I feel like I said a bunch of stuff in the beginning, and now I ran out of stuff to say. So.
All right, we are going to wrap it up right there. We will be passing the seventh tradition basket, and the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group and central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name's Melissa, and I'm an alcoholic.
And Melissa.
So we do late-night meeting in Virginia Beach in the BBRC on Mondays at 10 p.m. It's also a big book study. Just started last Monday, so if you know anyone that is looking for a late-evening meeting, it's at 10 p.m. It's called The Last Call at the BBRC, which is at 19th and Baltimore. All right.
The only alcoholic. Speaking of late night meetings, Saturday nights in Virginia Beach, there's a meeting at 10 o'clock p.m. It's Sick and Twisted. It's meets at the Friends School on Laskin Road next to the Good Lutheran Shepherd Church. It's an open discussion meeting, so anybody is welcome. And yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Hello, alcoholic.
Hello.
Thanksgiving Day, the New Day Group will be open for six. The first meeting will start at 6 in the morning. The last meeting will be at 10:30 at night. We're going to have a meeting every hour and a half, 1 hour meeting, half hour meeting. There'll be plenty of food there. You can hang around there all day. Or, like I did, I go home and I hang out with the family and go back to the meeting. Go back home, hang out with the family, go back to the meeting. I'm trying to stay sober my first Thanksgiving.
The International Women's Conference is just around the corner. If you want to get involved, the meeting is this Sunday at 5 o'clock at the Marriott Waterside Sheridan Hotel.
Waterside Marriott, whatever.
Yeah. Call me, call Deal, ask anyone. Yeah, we also have flyers.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, and the Simple Actions Group, we are indeed having an event of our own. Supper and a speaker on Monday, November 30th. We are going to have a potluck supper at 6 p.m. And we'll have a speaker, CDP, from Gloucester, Virginia at 7. So please come out and join us for that. And Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, can you raise your hands? And is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Jeff.
Welcome.
How are you?
All right. And we do have literature available here. The pamphlets are free. We've also got some flyers. If you're interested in a big book, just see one of the home group members. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions about or would like additional information on sponsorship in AA, we have Leanne and Catherine who will be available at the table after we close this meeting. Please feel free to come up and ask them. Just a reminder, Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And I just want to thank Alfred and Ryan again. Thank you very much. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd Street, just a few minutes down the road. And can someone read the last two paragraphs on page 164, Mr. Francis?
I'm Holly, my name's David.
Hi, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we grow only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great factor for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, and we'll close up with the Lord's Prayer.
All right.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil.